We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts of bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on NavaClub.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker tonight. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight we've got Tim B. from Cumming. He's been sober since 1984, and he came and visited our group maybe about 3 or 4 months ago. It was a kind of a homecoming for him that night, and we invited him to come back and share his story, and this is his first opportunity. So please welcome Tim B.
I am Tim Burke, and I am an alcoholic. I brought me some notes. It's been about 5 years since I've done this. A good friend of mine, Jimmy Smith, used to start off with a little joke, and I wanted to tell you all that joke about the Zuzu fly. And I don't know if there's any lawyers or judges here tonight, but there was a fly in the courtroom, and the bailiff started swatting at it, and the judge started swatting at it, and they said, "What is it?" And there was a drunk in the courtroom that day, and he said, "It's a Zuzu fly, Your Honor." And he said, "What kind of fly is that?" And he said, "That's the kind of fly that flies around a horse's ass." And he said, "You're trying to call me a horse's ass?" And he said, "No, sir, Your Honor, but you don't fool those Zuzu flies." I tell you, I never liked judges and attorneys and cops and police department, sheriff's department. I never did that. You know, my father drank, and he would come home, and he'd tear up my mother's house. And my mother wasn't the kind of person that you'd tear up her house. And he'd pass out, and then she would whoop his ass. She'd get a pot or a pan, and she'd lay into him, and she'd whoop him good, you know. And he quit coming home. He quit. He said, "What an order. I can't go through it." What an order. You know. It's hot up here. Yeah, you're right, Jim. It's hot up here. She'd whoop him, and he drank a Pabst Blue Ribbon. I probably took my first drink of booze when I was probably about 3 or 4 years old. I wanted to be like my father. And he'd sit in a chair, and he'd drink that Pabst Blue Ribbon, and they'd get a little warm, and he'd slide them. I'd hide behind the chair, and he'd slide them back to me. And I'd finish off those warm Pabst Blue Ribbon beers. And I just couldn't, you know. I think I probably was an alcoholic before I ever took a drink, before I ever took the first one. And, you know, me and my brother was always running the streets. We'd run in the streets and getting into trouble ever since I can remember. I mean, ever since we could get out of the house, I think we was getting in trouble, you know. I think I was about 10 years old, and there was a lady out in front of the bar, and I pinched her on the ass, and she turned around. And somehow we got her purse down the alley, my brother and my sister and I, and we all got her purse down the alley. And it had $1.03 in it. And the state pressed charges on it. They got me and my sister, and they arrested us. And they had a juvenile cell then. And then they sent my brother and my sister off. They sent them to Boys Industrial School and Girls Industrial School. And so they thought it was best that I go to Detroit, Michigan, to live with my aunt in Detroit. And I tell you what, I think I would have rather went to a Boys Industrial School with my brother. I think I would have rather went to Waldo. I went up to Detroit, and my cousin was dealing. And I got a lot of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, but I do have a little bit of that other stuff in there. And my cousin was dealing, and she was giving me stuff. And I started drinking, and I probably was only 11 years old, started drinking and drugging already. And I stayed there in Detroit and went to school up there for 2 years, and I tell you what, it wasn't easy. I tell you what, it really wasn't easy on me. You know, and, you know, coming back from Michigan, we was all smoking a little and getting, you know, trying to get all of them we could, you know, just trying to help me out and trying to get me a good one, you know, give a good buzz before I went home, you know. And we were smoking and smoking cigarettes, and we was thinking Barb didn't know what the hell we was doing, you know, my Aunt Barbara. And we was thinking, hell, she said no. So we were smoking it up, and the state patrol pulls us over. And she rolled down the window, and he says, damn, who's been smoking all that dope? And she said, that's them damn kids. That's them damn kids back there. And I'm like, damn, Barb, you sell us out. I mean, sell us out that quick. I mean, damn, you know. I said, golly. You know, so we made it back, and her and my mom started fighting. She called me a dog. She said, here, Minnie, take your dog. You know, that's what kind of family I had. Called me a damn dog, you know. But they arrested her, and everything got, you know, and then mom finally got custody of me, and mom was dealing. My mom was a pharmacist. She just didn't have a license, you know. I mean, she was dealing everything. I mean, if it was a pill, she had it, you know. And I'd come home from school, and I'd see about 15 or 20 junkies in my house when I get home from school. And thank God I was scared of needles. Thank God I was scared of them. Because if I would have got on those, I might have not made it to y'all. I might have never made it. So, Mom was dealing, and was coming home from school and seeing all these junkies, and got in trouble again at 15, know what happened? My sister died on me. Her and her cousin was in a car wreck, and my sister was 18 years old. She had long black hair and big brown eyes and dark complected and just a beautiful girl. And her and her cousin one night, they was in a car drinking, and I don't know why no one could take the distributor wire off the car, or you know, just go out there and do something to it where they couldn't get in it and get on the highway and get down there and get killed like that. And my cousins were in town, and they had just fought with her, and she had big bite marks on her where they had been fighting with her. And they're out there in front of the funeral home pouring out dope in front of the funeral. I mean, it's just a mess. You know, it's just a mess, you know. And I was 15, and I broke down. And, you know, and at 17, the law come in on us and busted us. Mom was selling pills. And I think for a while, she paid them off. And then she quit paying them off, and then they got pissed off, so they come in and, you know, they come in and bust us one night. And it's been a while, like I say, since I've done this, but probably over 5 years. But they come all in, they're taking money and everything, left the door wide open, and took us all into jail. And me and my brother was in the juvenile cell, and my mom was in the women's cell. They had a women's cell back in behind us, and she was in that cell. And then my brother come in for stealing a hot water tank. And I don't know why in the hell you'd want to steal a hot water tank, but he did. He did. And they put his ass in the drunk tank across the hall. And he was looking through that little slot there, and I didn't know who it was. The guy came back here and said, well, we got PJ, and we got you and Waldo. He said, we got Minnie in the cell behind you. He said, hell, we'll get Dave and Kathy. We'll have the whole damn family. You know, so. And Mom's back there hollering, you kids go to bed. And I'm like, you can't tell us to go to bed. You can't tell us to go to bed. I mean, it's not like we're going to be anywhere in the morning. You know, we ain't going nowhere for a while. You know, they got drug trafficking. You know, so, hell, we might be away. You know, so, and Robert liked that one, old Robert. But I tell you what, man. And that's the way it was. That's the way it was. You know, I was 16, and I think before I even got my license, we pulled up. You know, I'm from Ohio, and you know, they got them little rows and pull up in. You kind of, you know, sit aside there and get you a 12-pack, and you know, sit there and have you a few beers, and have a licensed driver with me. I didn't have a license. You know, I had a little permit, and. You know, they made us pour. I can remember pouring out them 12 beers and just hating to pour out those 12 beers, you know, and not even having a license. And by the time I was 19, I was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. By the time I was 19 years old, I was coming to meetings and was sober and was a part of this fellowship. So between 16 and 19, I got 5 DUIs in 3 years. And just you know, just couldn't get in enough trouble. Just couldn't stay out of the county jail. Yeah, that was my own. I think they called me Otis there for a while. They called me Otis, you know. You know, because I just couldn't stay out of that damn place, you know. But came to the program of alcoholism anonymous. I went to a detox. Detox was $10 a day in 1984. $10 a day in Ashland, Kentucky. And I didn't have the $30, so I still owe them $30. But $10 a day. I bet you can't go through a day of detox now for $10. I bet you. And then these big books were probably about $10,000 a piece. You know, about $10,000, $20,000 a piece. You know, all the stuff, you know, in the hospitals. But I went through detox, and I didn't have a place to live. You know, the environment I was in, I was with everybody that drank and drug and everything like that. I didn't have a place to go. You know, so they put me in a halfway house in Kentucky. And I stayed there for a couple of months. I let a guy in drunk, and they kicked me out. And it just kept pounding on the door. And I finally got up and let him in, you know. And they sent me to Hamilton, Ohio. I went up there and went into a halfway house up there. And everybody was slipping out and drinking and smoking this or smoking that and getting, you know, and getting loaded and everything like that. And I was scared to death to get up. They didn't have anybody to chair the meetings or set up the chairs or anything like that. So, and I was scared to death of doing it. I mean, I was probably emotionally probably about 11 years old, you know. You know, I went to school, but hell, I never, you know, I was drunk at the time, so I didn't learn anything, you know. So, you know, and I was setting up these chairs and chairing these meetings, and the hell, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I was going through the motions, and I wasn't slipping out back and trying to drink something or try to smoke something, you know, and I was doing the deal. And one night, a guy come in, and he had gotten drunk, and he come in, he was halfway in his bed and halfway out, and his face was all bashed in where somebody beat the hell out of him. And I told myself, you know, I said, you know what, I don't want to leave like that, because I've been through enough stuff, you know what I'm saying? You know, I can remember sleeping in the streets and alleys and waking up here and waking up there and just waking up everywhere, you know. And just, Mom was scared to death that I wasn't going to make it. I can remember her dragging me down the railroad tracks one day. I passed out on the railroad tracks and I looked up and my feet were just thump over them cross ties, just flipping over them cross ties. And she was just saying, honey, you just ain't going to make it. You just ain't going to make it. And, but like I say, I just didn't want to leave like that. I just didn't want to leave busted up like that. So I started going to the YMCA down there. They had the meetings down at the YMCA in Hamilton. And my cousins were closed. They was in Middletown, Ohio. So, and I didn't know they were so closed, but I finally figured out they was closed. So I did get to spend, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas and go down there and spend a little bit of time with my my cousins, you know, down in Hamilton, Ohio. Or Marion, you know, Middletown area. So I went down there and spent some time with them. But I came to Georgia, and I hit Georgia March of 85, and still I didn't have a place to live. My counselor sent me a bus ticket to Lexington. She picked me up in Lexington. Her and her husband were Christian people, and they baptized me in the tub, and they brought me down here. She had four daughters about my age, and they was all coming back from college. And I was staying with her, and I was thinking, hey, this is going to work out great. You know, this is going to work out nice, real nice, you know. And she said, no, Tim, you're leaving. You're leaving. I'm like, damn. Thinking, oh, yeah, this is going to work out good. Because them daughters were her. I mean, she has some beautiful daughters, you know. So she was a good people. Real good people. I remember when I went in and told her my story. I had went in there at 17 to a community alcoholism service program because I had a DUI or something like that, and I went in there. And there was a guy in there, and he said, well, I've been clean 5 years, and, you know, I was a heroin addict or whatever, and I've been clean. And I didn't want to hear it. At 17, I didn't want to hear it. So he said, you don't have to hear his story if you don't want to. You can send him away. Just send him away. And she said, no, I want to hear his story. So she really saved my life is what she did. She really saved my life. And I told her my story about everything, and she said, how did you make it? And I said, I don't know. And so she was the one who helped me get in all the halfway houses and then helped me get to Atlanta. And then I went in the MAR program, you know, because I didn't have a place to go. So I went to MAR. And then I got to listen to that Mama's Boy and the Boy Next Door, all that good stuff at DAC. And And then they put me on antabuse, which I was sober 6 months. I didn't need the antabuse. I didn't have a desire to stop, you know, stop desire to drink. But, you know, I went through all that, you know. And I found NAVA. NAVA was the salvation for me. It really was. Found NAVA March of 85. And, you know, them boys that were here in the 80s, early 80s, aren't, a lot of them boys aren't around anymore, like Stan and Paul Chapelier and Joe Phelan from Skyland, and all them boys are, they're still a part of me, but they're no longer with us. But you know, Stan used to tell them, "This ain't Burger King. You can't have it your way." You know, and he'd get on them. Stan would. He really would. I got my first sponsor in this room next door here, Bob Crawford, and I had about 10 numbers. And I called every single one of them. And the last one I called was Bob. And he answered the phone, and he saved my life. And Bob got sober May of 84, and I got sober October of 84. So he only had just a few months more. But he had a guy that had 10 years of sobriety that was taking him through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what I needed. I needed somebody that I could trust that would take me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's where you work your steps at. And they laid this book out that you can take a person through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's how they laid that book out. And it's just, you know, we complicate it, though, you know, because we're drunks. You know, we're going to complicate it, you know. And we're going to read between the lines. You know, we ain't going to read the black print, you know. You know. Yeah, so. But thank God I haven't had to drink since my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't know why that is. I guess that's God's grace, I guess. You know, I've probably been to probably about 12,000 AA meetings, but it's not the meetings I make. It's the steps I took that keeps me sober in the program. Yeah. But Bob took me through the 12 steps, and I had long hair then. I had long hair and a few tattoos, and I didn't have a place to go, and I had moved in with a guy, and he started using again. I called Bob up, and I only had one little bag of clothes. And Bob and I was in Lawrenceville, and I don't know why I moved all the way out to Lawrenceville, because I couldn't get in meetings. I was hitchhiking to AA meetings. I was hitchhiking after trying to get over here to Navin so I could catch a meeting. But Bob said, how quick can you be ready? And I'm like, well, I've only got a couple T-shirts and a pair of pants. I think Bob will be ready in about 2 minutes. I said, I'll be ready. I said, I'll be ready when you get out here. How about that? I'll be ready. I'll be ready to go. And he told Catherine, he said, now, Catherine, I'm going to move this boy. He said, I'm going to move him in. She said, are you sure you're doing the right thing here, Bob? She said, he kind of scares me. He kind of scares me. And I slept on Bob's couch. And I never had a checking account. So Bob and I, we opened up a joint checking account. He said, what you do is you open up a joint account. And he said, then what I'll do is later on I'll take my name off it. And then you'll have your own checking account. And then we'll get you established. We'll get you some credit and get you, you know, so, and I never ever had any of that. You know, like I said, I was 19 years old. So I slept on Bob's sofa, and he put me on the third step of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I read that third step every night and every morning for about 30 days. And then me and Bob hit our knees together, and we took that third step prayer together. And, you know, they said 15 people did that in a group. They had a group of people to do that third step prayer together. They said, now those 15 people, 14 of those people stayed sober out of the 15 that did that third step prayer together. And that's pretty good odds. I'll take them 14 out of 15 any day. That's pretty good odds. So, but I did it sincerely. Now, I've done that third step prayer with people that have went out and gotten drunk, you know. But there's a difference between doing it wholeheartedly and not, you know, giving yourself to it, you know. So, and that's what the old timers say. They say if you'll do 3 and 7 in the morning, and if you'll do 10 at night, and, you know, Roop says you plug into that loving God in the morning. Tom Iverster, he got sober February 2nd of 57. He says you, what you do is you don't forget the new guy. You don't forget the new guy. So, you know, and those guys that went before me, I mean, they saved my life, and they'll always be a part of me. They'll always be a part of me. As long as I can, you know, as long as I can get up and show up and clean up or whatever, you know. So, I talked too quick. I don't know if I could talk 45 minutes or not. You know, I stayed with Bob, I guess, a while, and then I got me a roommate. He's not around anymore, and moved in a little apartment and shared. I did a lot of sharing apartments because I just didn't have, you know, I didn't make a whole lot. You know, I didn't have an education. I did go back and started studying for a GED, and I did go back and get that much and did do that much and get me a high school education or equivalent GED. So I did get me a high school education so I could get me a job with the county. I'm out in Cumming, Georgia now, and I've been out there about 12 years, and I've been working for the county, for Scythe County out there, and it takes at least a GED to work for the county. So when I do maintenance on the building, just put in some light bulbs, just some simple stuff. But I like it. I enjoy it. And I met my wife here. We put together 12 good years together, and 12 happy years, and we had a nice home out in Cumming, Georgia. And we've been divorced about 3 years now. But my son's 14, and he's in high school now. He's just went to ninth grade, smart as a whip. Can't tell him anything because he won't hush, you know. If he would stop for just a minute, you could probably tell him, but you can't. There's just no sense in even trying. But he's a good kid. He really is. We had a lot of good times here at NAB. I'll tell you what, the dances and the alcathons and just all the guys, man, just all the people. And seeing a lot of them come and go. Old Shaky Sam, I got ran over when I had 3 years of sobriety, and forklift ran over me. And I had all these pins and needles that crushed my foot, and it compound fracture, tore two arteries in my leg, almost took my right leg off is what it did, almost took it right off. And I was laid up for about 2.5 years. I would say, don't drink, don't work, and go to meetings. Because that's what I was doing. That's what I was doing. So, and I did that for about 2.5 years, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that. Sleeping in. And we was at the hospital one night. They brought me my 3-year chip at the hospital. And I remember Brian coming in there, you know, Brian, old crazy Brian, and all of them coming over there, and I'm on oxygen. I'm over there on oxygen, and all these drunks in there just puffing away, you know, smoking, you know, just puffing away. And damn nurse comes in and says, "You're gonna blow this whole damn room off, here." I said, "She said, where the hell do you know all these people from anyway?" I said, "They're drunks. They're from the AA clubhouse down in Napa." I said, "They're all damn drunks." They would, I'll tell you what, and that helped a lot, I'll tell you, them people coming in and out of there. I'll tell you, she said, "Man, I'll tell you what, you got a lot of friends. You really do. You got a lot of friends. A lot of people love and care about you." And that's why I told that joke in the beginning, because the guy said, love is one half of the program, and laughter is the other half. And that's what old Jimmy would say. You know, and that love and that laughter will keep you here. You know, in that service, you know, not forgetting the new guy. And, you know, I just can't believe that I am, you know, still here after 27 years later. You know, it'll be 27 years next month. I just can't really believe that I'm still here. You know, so, God had a purpose for me. You know, He really had a purpose for me. And, you know, I'm not here to promote it. You know, it's here for each and every one of us. You know, I believe we really got to study this book. You know, it's our Bible. You know, I really believe if you're an alcoholic, you understand that. And I'm on borrowed time. You know, I don't think I'm supposed to be here. There's no way I could have got out of that place I was in. I don't know if y'all ever have been to Ironton, Ohio, but that's where I was, Ironton, Ohio. And that place is a dead place. I'll tell you what, it is dead as hell. And there's no way I could have got out of there without a loving God. There's no way. I believe He just picked me up. He just picked me up, and He just reloaded. You know that witness relocation program? That's what He did with me. He just picked me up and got me the hell up out of there. And I don't know how it happened, but that's what He did for me. And and I'll spend the rest of my life, one day at a time, making restitution and hopefully being a part of this program, by Christ's name. My wife, when she walked in the door here at Napa about 15 years ago, I just knew we'd be married. I knew we'd be married, and she come over one night before we was married. She come over and she said, "I've wrecked the car and I'm pregnant." And I said, "Well, let's go look at the car because we know what shape you're in, We know what shape you're in, It's a wonder we was ever married. It's a wonder. She's a good girl, I tell you. I told my boy the other day, I said, your uncles and your aunt and everybody on your mama's side, I said, I don't know if they ever liked me or not. And he said, "Doesn't matter, Dad." He said, "I love you. Doesn't matter, I love you." And I tell you what, that's a big deal for somebody like me to come from where I come from. That's a big deal. It really is. Because I never had a family. My family, my mother went to penitentiary 5 times for selling drugs. She went to prison 5 different times. And some of the stories she told me about them women up there, what they do to their kids and other women and all that stuff, man. I tell you what, I'm so thankful that judge let me go. Because I went in there and he said, "I don't want to send you to prison, Tim. I really don't want to send you to penitentiary." And he let me go, and I went back in there, and I went right back in front of the same judge for probation. But I went and got drunk one night and went and broke into the county jail, went and busted out the window of the county jail, and they said, "Tim, we've heard of them breaking out, but we've never heard of them breaking in." They said, "We've never heard of them breaking in. You just never know what you're going to do. I think get a bunch of booze in, But he let me go. And he saved my life. He actually saved my life, and I don't know who it was. I mean, I wish I could thank the guy. I really do. I wish I could go back and thank him. But to every single person that God put in my life helped make me the person I am. And, there's a story about these three big windows in this church. They got these artists, and they got these big artists, these grand artists that come and do these windows. And a guy told this story over at Skyline about 20 years ago. And he said they got this guy, and he'd done this big, and these windows had to be just great, They just had to be great, and they did these two windows, and they just, they was just at all, And then this drunk, he got the scraps from the other two guys. He got the scraps, and he did the window out of scraps. And that's like my life. I took the scraps from Stan Parks, the guy here in the front of this plank here, and I took the scraps from Roland Bryce, a little bit of what Roland shared with me, and then I took a little bit of what Paul Chapelier downstairs shared with me. I took a little bit from Paul, and I took a little bit from each and every one of the members that was here, the old timers that was here, and it's made me the person I am today, I ain't much, but I'm all I got, I'm all I got, and I try to live happy, joyous, and free. And, I don't do it perfect. I mean, I don't hit my knees every morning, but I try to stay real close to the fellowship of our place and ours, and that's kept me safe. And the fellowship is only the fellowship. If I don't live this way in life, if I don't stay in these principles, if I don't stay in this book, if I don't take it wholeheartedly, if it doesn't move from here to here, then I may never ever keep it, And I tell you what, I don't have another chance. I don't really believe I do. I don't believe I do. Thank God I haven't had to drink, because that head full of AA and that belly full of booze they talk about, I don't ever want to have to experience that. And so many people have done it for me. Old Henry running around here. Old Henry running around here. 12-step Henry about 22 years ago went up there and he laying on the sofa. It's all burned up. Booze all over him. Rough shape. He's in rough shape. He'd say, "I love you, man. I love you." And he'd say, "Fix me a drink." And I'd say, "I didn't come to fix you drinks." And he'd say, "I hate you, man. I hate your guts, man." And he said, I'm going to whoop your ass there. And I said, if you could get off of that sofa, you'd have a good chance. I'll whoop you. Oh, Henry. He kept me sober for a good year. Every bit of it. He thought one day, and it was icing out here. The bridge was icing up. And he said, man, I don't think I can make across that bridge, man. That bridge is icy. I don't think I can get across there, you know. I said, you can make it, Henry. You can make it. You got to be willing to go to any length. You know, you got to be willing to go to any length. You know, hell's far. You know, come on. Just take off now, you know. I was downstairs one day, and a guy called, and he said, yeah, he said, I was on the way over there. And he said, my car broke down, and he said, no. He said, I'm down the road here. He said, I'm having car trouble. I said, well, this is AA. This ain't AAA. I said, you want that? I said, this is AA. I said, that AAA. I said, I think I got the number for you. Said, What's your name? They said, Tim, don't be answering the phone no more. Tim, don't be answering the phone. Come on. I was trying to have a good time, hell, man. You know? I'm a convicted felon now for that drug trafficking. They busted me for that drug trafficking. I got that job out there in the county out there, and I think I filled out the application right. I think it said if you've been convicted within the last 7 years or something like this, I put nothing down there. So you know, they had this company doing a background check. They had this company doing it, and they did it a couple of years there. So I'd been with them a couple of years, and then the sheriff's department started doing it. The sheriff's department started doing it, so they got in there and they went all the way back to 84. And they said, one day, they said, Tim, the lieutenant wants to talk to you. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, they found out who I am. They found me. And my friend said, just be honest with them because they already know. He said, don't lie to them. So I went in and I told her what happened. I told her I took some pills down there. I told her I took some pills down there. And they was wired. He was wired. And that was that. And I haven't heard anything else from them, so, you know. So, apparently, they wanted to see if I'd lie to them or not. And my life ain't great, you know what I'm saying? I ain't no rock and roll singer like Stan Parks used to say. I ain't no rock and roll singer, no multimillionaire, but I tell you what. Every one of my needs are met today. Every one of them. And, you know, I'm truly blessed. I'm truly blessed because I'm a part of this thing. You know, I really am. I think I'll close a little early tonight. But, you know, I had this poem that this James wrote me. And it's really something. It's entitled The Will to Live. If I can find it here, I'll share it with you. And I'm going to sit in. It says, waking not knowing where you are, feeling life's at a dead end, another spirit for the mind brings another false reality. The soul dies, the heart has no valor. You reach the bottom with no self-respect or self-esteem to lift you. It says, another spirit for the mind brings yet another false reality. When it arrived or how it came, no one can explain. But no longer do you need the spirit to give you false reality. A true spirit moves inside you called God, which gives you the will to live without the spirit of alcohol. So, and that's me right there, you know, that true spirit. And I found that spirit in you people. And I found that spirit in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I found that true spirit in working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. One other thing, I was sharing in the meeting the other night. I said, I'm living proof. You can stay sober a long time and never amount to a whole hell of a lot. The guy that was doing the meeting that night, he said, yeah, but Tim, you've given the program of Alcoholics Anonymous 27 years of service. He said, that's a big deal. He said, that's a big deal. You've given him 27 years of service. And I have. And I've tried to. And I didn't come from GMHI. I came from the JIO. But most people, what the shirt say? They said, it says Penn State. Well, mine was going to say State Penn. I'm going to sit down, but I've enjoyed it. Thank you all for listening. Thanks, Tim. Tim's going to field a few questions. I know Tim Moore wants to ask at least one question. Anybody has any questions you want to ask about what you'd like to ask?
Hey, Tim. Not to tell the story about the 12-step call you made from here. You went out with a guy to see a guy who was drinking. I think the guy you went with, you remember what I'm talking about? He was actually one of the presidents of the club at one time. But I went over there and I took this guy with me. He had about 6 months of sobriety. And the guy was sitting there and he still had about half a fifth left. And he said, Tim, you know what I want to do? I said, no, what do you want to do? He said, yeah, I want to get drunk with it. And I said, well, y'all go ahead and I'll go back nap and I'll just call me when y'all are finished. So I guess you take y'all 12 steps and I'll make sure you call this to hear.
Anybody else have?
I got one. You mentioned Shaky Sam, then you went off in another direction to tell us what you were going to say about Shaky Sam.
Shaky took me down to the hospital. My leg got infected. And Shaky took me down to the hospital, took me down to the emergency room, and they said, we're going to keep him a few days and put him on, you know, IV and everything like that. They said, are you a relative? He said, hell no. He said, I'm just going to be bad at home.
Tim, that was one of your favorite Don Shear stories.
Don Shear. You know, Don was in the hospital over there at Emory. Last time I saw him. And I think he might have been with him. But old Don was talking about. You know, I told him, I said, I need to go on this interview or something. He said, good job. He said, you go in there and tell him. That's your job. He said, you tell him that's your job. I said, oh, I ain't got any feelings. And I'm like, good job. You couldn't tell him nothing. He just said, you tell him that's your damn job. Oh, no, boy. He said, he's a good guy. I was over 16 years and my mother said, you know, how long are you going to do those classes, honey? And I said, well, I guess if I want to stay sober, I better keep on keeping on. But yeah, she passed in 01 and I was over 16 years.
Well, thanks again for your service. It was really great. Tinsley, would you hand out the chips?
My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. And here at this meeting, we have the chip system to mark our time away from our last drink. If you'd like to try this way of life one day at a time, we offer a white chip. Would anybody like to pick up a white chip? Anybody else for a white chip? Silver chip for 30 days. Anybody got 30 days? Red chip for 90 days? About 6 months. Anybody got 6 months? Green chip for 90 days? Got a lot of these. Sorry, what? 9 months. Yeah, they're 90 days. 9 months. And anybody got a birthday? 1 year or multiples? Anybody want to reconsider on a white chip? Big hand for the chips you hold.
Okay, it's time for AA-related announcements or NABA Club announcements. Okay, yes,
sir. I'm Steve, and I'm an alcoholic. Saturday, September 17th, the Night House Group, the East Community Sophisticated Room, up until about 1990 or 1991, will again be meeting at its regularly scheduled time, 11 p.m. on Saturday nights. I'm not going to start out as the group will start a meeting just to keep the record straight. And us old timers, or quote unquote old timers from that year, really aren't spearheading it. It's a bunch of fairly new young people. And just sit back and make sure they do everything right. If they screw up in the least little way, we'll be right there to correct them. I can't smoke anywhere near Jeff County anymore.
Julie. I'm Julie, and I'm calling another base announcement. Next Saturday, the 10th, they're going to have a dance here at a disco on this floor and a coffee house by downstairs where fellow AAs will be entertaining you. Really talented AAs, and you'll be surprised from that. See how talented they are. And I'm selling tickets, and I have them here for $5. There's $7 on Saturday at the door, so $5 or $7 is probably a better deal to buy now. If you're not able to go, but you know, you want to support NABA, you can buy one and maybe just give it to somebody who can't afford it. So I'll be sticking around for a minute after the card for me.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. You know, it's going to be a really great time. Come early to the 12 and 12 meeting at 8 o'clock and help us get ready for the big dance floor upstairs and downstairs. Tinsley's going to be cranking it up acoustically, unplugged, to get things started. And we're going to have a great grouping of entertainers and hopefully a comedian or two. And so that's going to be a nice coffee house environment downstairs. Plus, we're going to be serving food, and the kitchen's going to be open. So it's going to be a big night, September 10th. Yes?
I'm an alcoholic. And if a couple of people would like to help me clean up the coffee area, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do. And if you haven't had your seat sheet signed, so come up front after the meeting. Next week, we've got Paul H. from Triangle telling his story, and Al V. from 7:30 early morning study group here at NABA will be Monday after next. Al V. Okay, so if there's nothing else, I'd like to remind everyone that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Every mind is placed principles before personalities, and for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
Who are his next great meeting?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Ye did come to die for the words of the word, and the words of the word.
Danger. dancing. Now she's looking for a dream. Danger. It's out into the
such a